Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Coming up.
Did you see it? One of the greatest upsets in sports history. Holly Holm knocking out Ronda Rousey. In the studio right now, Holly Holm, UFC champion. Free for all.
Where sports meets life and everything in between. From the Wall Street Journal, this is Free for All with Jason Gay.
Yeah, it's the Free for All. And as always, joined by my friend, my editor, my colleague, Jim Cherusmi. Jim, how are you?
How you doing, Jason? Exciting day.
Exciting day. You know, Jim, I've been out traveling this wonderful country the last couple weeks. You know why?
Why?
Promoting my book.
Little Victories.
Little Victories. Perfect Rules for Imperfect Living. And it's been a wonder to meet the readers of the Wall Street Journal. And one of the things I get asked, Jim, one of the things people want to ask anybody in the sports business, and I'm sure people ask you this too, Jim, why do you ever get bored of it? Do you ever get bored of sports? Is there something about it that finally wears you down? Does it start to feel like any other job? And I always say, absolutely not. I mean, come on, it's sports writing. You know, what's to be bored of? It's one of the best, luckiest things you can possibly be. But what really makes it remarkable, what really keeps you energized, is those moments in sports, and they're rare, when you see something happen which is just so transcendent and in some cases shocking and so exciting, and it just sort of spins the sports world upside down. The reason I'm saying this, Jim, is we have a very special guest in the studio today.
I would say it was a huge victory.
This was not a little victory. It was a huge victory. It was one of those seismic sports moments that, you know, whether you watched it live or you saw some of it the next day, or you just saw the headline, it stunned you. And so that's my way of introducing UFC champion Holly Holm. Holly, so happy to have you here.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you.
Now, let's just backtrack for some of our audience who might not be familiar with mixed martial arts, with the UFC, and what Holly Holm did about a week and 2 days ago. She defeated arguably the most popular, the most discussed UFC champion of all time, Ronda Rousey, someone who was undefeated, someone who had become an incredible business for the UFC, a transcendent sports celebrity in her own right, but someone who had been kind of assumed to be unbeatable. And Holly, you beat her, and it wasn't, there was nothing flukish about it. It was such a convincing performance, and I want to get to all that, but I want to just ask, like, what have the last, you know, 9 days been like? First of all, you had to come back from Australia, so that's stressful enough, and you're
that's a feat all in its own.
Yeah, I mean, where are you mentally, clock-wise, you know, feeling-wise? How would you rate your mood right now?
So my mood right now is great.
Yeah.
I mean, what an experience. As far as the time clock, I don't know if it's the time clock or if it's just the running around, but sometimes I don't know if I'm going forward or backward or sideways, but,
everyone wants to talk to you right now, it seems, right? I mean, there's a good amount of, there's a pretty substantial demand on your time right now.
There is, but every time that I hear of the next thing we have to do, I just think, oh, yeah, it's because we won, so that's fine with me.
Do you like it? Is this part of, like, do you consider this to be part of your occupational description, the promotional aspect of it, or do you kind of rather be training?
Well, we wouldn't have a job if we didn't have fans, and we wouldn't have the exposure if we didn't have the media to put it out there, so I definitely appreciate all of that. My number one thing I like to do is train.
Yeah.
Because that's what I do. That's my job.
Yeah.
That's my passion. So if it was up to me, then
you'd be back in Albuquerque.
I would be, well, I would be.
Yeah.
But you know what though? It's kind of nice to have some time off.
Yeah. Thanksgiving coming up.
I'm excited for that. I'll be in Colorado.
Yeah.
enjoying looking at some snow.
Now, is it a cheat day for you? Anything you want?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I have missed Thanksgiving for the last, like, 10 years.
You're kidding me.
Not kidding you.
Because of fight obligations?
I always have a fight in December. And my fight, last year I had a semi-Thanksgiving.
Okay.
I was supposed to fight in December. I got a bad injury, had to postpone it. So it was kind of around that time where I kind of had a Thanksgiving, but it was still in the middle of two training camps.
All right.
But pretty
much. Not really the real thing, though.
Right.
Yeah.
This is going to be the real thing. I'm looking forward to it.
And so when they go around the table and they say, what do you have to be thankful for, Holly?
Victory.
All right. I want to get into it. A lot of things have been said and written in the post-fight analysis here. I don't know if you read them or hear them or they'll just make you laugh. But one of them is that Ronda Rousey came out to fight and wanted to go toe-to-toe with you, that you are a boxer by trade, then a kickboxer who has migrated into mixed martial arts, and she wanted to go toe-to-toe with you in your best discipline, and that clearly was a mistake. I just want to get your assessment of that and if you found that to be surprising yourself.
I think she did try to start with the exchanges, but any fight starts on your feet.
Yeah.
That's just where it starts.
Yeah.
But there is a point where she pushed me back on the cage and tried to take me down, and we defended it. And there was a point where we kind of got into a stalemate on, you know, in a clinch, went to the ground. She went for an armbar, and I got out of it. And then another time she went for a hip toss, and I took her down. So I can't say that she just tried to stay and box.
It's not like you didn't see that clinch side.
Right. But she did. Maybe she tried for a little bit, and then she went to try a little bit of, you know, what her game, what her, you know, strengths are, her go-tos.
Yeah.
We were just ready for them.
In your preparation, did you walk into that octagon that night and feel, we have a game plan, we know what we're going to do? Because, that, you know, again, it was such a convincing victory for you. Not just the knockout, of course, but every step of the way, really. Did you really think it was going to go as well as it did that night?
Going in there, I thought it was going to be more of a war.
Yeah.
But I always feel like that because that's what I train for. I just imagine five hard rounds.
Yeah.
Because you need to be ready for five hard rounds. So I want to mentally be ready. So in my mind, I'm just thinking, this is going to be a hard five rounds. Yeah. And we all have seen Ronda's fights. She usually is pretty aggressive, imposes her will on her opponents. And so I figured, you know, it's going to be a very active five rounds, not just five rounds, but an active five rounds.
Yeah.
And she has a very competitive spirit, so I don't think that she would have been, you know, dying down anytime soon. So in my mind, that's what I was thinking, that this person's going to be right in front of me. She's never been dazed or rocked in a fight before, so
right.
I'm thinking she might just be standing there all night no matter what I hit her with. So,
yeah.
Yes, the fight took a great turn from what I was preparing myself for, but that was just, I always say I prepare for the full five rounds, and if the knockout's there, then yes, I want to take advantage of it.
You got to her very early and staggered her very early, and did you say to yourself internally, okay, now, you know, now there's something here, now I, you know, can work in a different way than I anticipated a little bit more quickly?
After feeling just kind of some of the, getting into the fight, you know, it's always the first part of the fight when that bell rings is the most nerve-wracking. And once those first few punches are thrown, you can kind of get into it. It's kind of like, okay, I've done this before. I've, you know, how many days have I been sparring? How many fights have I had up till now?
Yeah.
You know, those first punches are always kind of that, you know, the first part of the fight is always the most nerve-wracking. But
And this is also a strange thing because you're fighting in Melbourne. Yeah. And so it's a weird part of the day, too. You're fighting in sort of the late afternoon, early evening in Melbourne because they're playing it live, of course, back in the United States. It's, you know, after midnight here in New York. So does that change the dynamic, too, in terms of just getting ready?
It just changed my schedule for the day.
Yeah.
But we train all day at home. We don't wait till the nighttime.
Right.
You know, we get up, we have practice in the morning. And I thought, you know what? I eat breakfast and I go to practice and I work out really hard. Like, I can do this no matter what time of the day it is. So I did just have to kind of calculate, okay, I usually eat breakfast and then I walk around, let my food digest, I have lunch. I walk around, I braid my hair. I get my bag ready for to go. Like, I have this whole routine.
Yeah.
Give or take an hour or two or this thing before that. I mean, it's not like I have a superstition about how it needs to be laid out. But I thought, okay, well, we're going to be fighting. You know, I was heading to the venue at 1:30, which is basically, you know, right at the end of lunchtime. Yeah. And I thought, okay, well, what food should I eat? And then what time should I eat it to where it'll kind of digest about the time that my, like, early dinner would for when I fight at 9:30 at night.
What are you the most superstitious about? Are you superstitious about tons of things?
I'm not superstitious about anything.
Okay.
I have a schedule, and I think that it works well because it's mostly like, I just want to eat these foods.
Gotcha.
Because they digest better, and I want to eat them at this time so that I'm not too full before the fight or I'm not, you know, hungry and have no energy.
Right.
So that's more of just, like, it works.
Yeah.
But it's not like a superstition to where, you know.
In terms of your preparation, was there anything in particular that you and your team worked on in advance that you say, I'm really happy we did that. I'm really happy we sort of focused on that. It was clear your fitness was great. You know, it didn't get tested into a 5-round match, of course, but.
You know, we worked heavily on cage work. We worked heavily on, you know, jiu-jitsu and armbar defense, and we worked on judo, and we worked on what I do.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you consider to be what you do?
I like to pick clean shots, and I like to kind of have a variety of things that I'll throw, and I'm okay being in somebody else's strength.
Yeah.
That's part of me is, like, I guess it's a, like, tiny bit of ego.
Sure.
In the fight, I took Rhonda down, and that wasn't part of our game plan.
Really? No. Not that clean of a shot.
That was just kind of, I'm just going to go with it. I'm feeling good.
So she goes down, and there's a quick flurry, and then the fight is stopped. Who's the first person to reach you, and what do they say?
When the fight's first over, it's kind of that, it sounds really selfish, but it's like that moment for me.
Yeah.
It's like, yes.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's my team, you know, my coach is right there, and it was just, you know, they're on the top of the cage, and that image will be with me forever.
Yeah.
It's kind of, we did it. You did it. I'm like, no, we did it, you know, because I couldn't do it without them, so.
What was the first thing Dana said to you?
He just said, congratulations. What a fight, you know?
Now, from there, I don't know how it felt to be you, and I want to ask you, but from the outside, it looks like you go from 0 to 1,000 miles an hour after that. Because the next day, all of the United States wakes up, and if they didn't see the fight, it's like, what?
Yeah.
And it's the lead story. We noticed at the Journal, it was the lead story on the Journal sports page for a couple of days. And readers were really fascinated to know about this and know more about you. You know, what was that like? I mean, just to have the whole country kind of waking up and wondering about you.
I knew what I was up against, and I knew how big this fight was, and it was a reminder every day when I was in the gym. If I didn't have a good day, I'd go back at night and work on it more.
Yeah.
Because I knew that I was up against something big, but I knew that beating her would be one of the biggest upsets in sports history.
And so you believe it is one of the biggest upsets in sports history?
I do. It's one of.
Right.
I don't put it as, you know.
Jim Tarusmi once took a set off me in tennis, and I think that still ranks as number one.
But I'll give that to you.
The boxing world, you've been getting quite a bit of love from the boxing world that loves the fact that, you know, there's always been the argument within mixed martial arts about, you know, superiority of wrestlers versus, you know, grapplers versus jiu-jitsu versus boxing. And that you, you know, this was a big moment for boxing. And do you buy that, or do you think, you know, of course it ended with a leg kick, but, like, you know.
Okay, so I am 100% really blessed to have a very good, successful boxing career, and wouldn't have had that if I didn't have the supporters and diehard fans.
Yeah.
So especially in women's boxing.
Yeah.
You have to be a diehard fan to be a women's boxing fan because it's just not as exposed.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, it can be very hard to get a promoter. It can get hard to get fights.
Absolutely.
Money, forget about it. Yeah.
Yes. Women's boxing is probably the least promoted combat sport, I believe.
I mean, how many times were we ever on TV?
4.
Yeah.
Out of, 40, basically.
Yeah, 4 out of 40, yeah.
So not a lot.
Yeah.
So it's I've had more fights on TV in MMA.
Sure.
And I only have 10 fights.
Yeah.
So it definitely has a big difference there. So boxing has helped me with a huge, huge ground foundation, I guess is what I'm trying to say. But there's still different things with MMA, and there's things that I've had to adjust to and adapt with and learn for MMA. So, yes, a lot of the boxing background taught me a lot and did help benefit in this fight, but there was clinch game. There was kicks. There was a whole, there's a whole other thing. So I'm not going to say that it's one over the other. It is mixed martial arts, and it was more than just punching. So,
you know, there are many elite athletes who talk about the process of envisioning and, envisioning the moment in which they, whether it's the Super Bowl or winning the Masters in golf or an Olympic medal. Had you envisioned that moment of winning that fight, especially in that fashion?
I would envision it so much I would cry.
Is that true?
It's true.
Yeah.
I would sit in my car and I could visualize it so much I could taste it.
Yeah.
And I would get so emotional about it. Like, how great is this going to be? And there's days that I had doubt in myself because I had a bad day in training. I mean, that's just what a mind does.
Yeah.
Mine does, and I would say most of them do.
Yeah.
There's days you doubt yourself because maybe you're not performing well in practice. And then there's days where I think about this person coming into my gym and sparring with me just in the gym. And I'm thinking, the way I picture myself in my gym sparring, I'm doing so much better. I'm like, why am I putting this as something bigger? Like, I really feel like I have the skill for this. I feel like I can do this. And so there's moments of highs and lows and positive, negative, but that's what keeps me driving to learn more. If I felt like I was just great and didn't need to learn anything, or that I was that much better, then I wouldn't keep striving to get better.
Now what is the big question, of course. You know, you have this road ahead of you, which you envision, but maybe a lot of people in the sport might not have envisioned for you. What's before you?
We'll see. Whatever they come with, if it's a rematch, if it's someone else, I do know that I want to fight.
Yeah.
I always like sooner than later, for the most part.
Yeah.
I've always been an active fighter in my boxing career. I used to fight 4 times a year. That's every 3 months, which is kind of...
So you're not taking 2 years off, is what you're saying?
No. No.
Would springtime be reasonable?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd love to fight in the spring.
I want to ask you, one thing that Rhonda... I always found very impressive about what she had done was, not just her athletic accomplishments, but her accomplishments as a business person. I mean, she is somebody who entered a sport and started, as you did, at a time when the UFC was not allowing women to fight. So you take an enormous gamble in terms of, teaching yourself this thing, which you don't know necessarily is going to have a payoff. But then, in a very short space of time, and I mean, it's breathtaking, becomes not just the first woman in the UFC, but the top draw. I mean, she is headlining cards, as you guys headlined with 193. And when you look across the landscape of women in sports, that's a remarkable thing because we hear all the time about, well, is there an economic demand for it? Do fans want it? And the UFC doesn't do anything unless it's good business, Jim, right? I mean, they're not getting in this, Dana White is an interesting character, but he's not doing this out of the goodness. I mean, he's doing this for business because it's great business.
And sold out in Australia.
So do you see it? I don't know if a responsibility might be a too strong way of putting it, but do you feel like you can pick up on that and continue to build women's fighting in the UFC?
So something that first of all, Rhonda has done a very good job with that. You're very right. And without her, there wouldn't be a lot of the opportunities. I'm aware of that. She's had a very busy schedule and done a lot.
Yeah.
So my dad has always told me since I was young that a lot of people are afraid of failure.
Yeah.
But even more people are afraid of success because more is expected of you. And that's very true in a lot of situations. You know, sometimes it's easy to be comfortable in your own kind of comfort zone.
Yeah.
Don't want to push too high because if you do succeed, then people are going to say, okay, now what? And that is, this is one of those things that, you know, I was eating lunch with some of my friends right before, I mean, I want to say maybe just a few weeks before the fight, and I was just talking about having to do the media, and, you know, when I get to the gym, that's the last place I want photos. Long story short, we're just talking about it, and they're like, what's so funny is that's like, you don't like that. And I'm like, but that doesn't mean I don't want to win. Like, I'll take what comes with it. And I know that if a victory over her, you know, that would be, it would be a huge demand on a lot of different things. But that doesn't mean I don't want to win. I said, whatever comes with it is what's going to come with it because I want the victory. But,
you know. You're your own you. You know, you're going to blaze your own trail. I have to mention we have a piece of hardware in here, Jim, which is the belt, the title belt. May I put my hands on it, or are you not allowed to touch it unless you're a champion?
You know, I've been... No, you can totally touch it.
All right.
I know a lot of people have a lot of... I told you, I have no superstitions.
First of all,
I
can't lift it, Jim.
It's pretty
heavy. Well, how many pounds does this thing weigh, you think?
I don't know.
20?
Maybe Dave knows.
Boy, oh boy. It is heavy.
Do you get to take it with you? Like, do you bring it home?
What, do you think it's a rental, Jim?
Well, like, do you have to bring it back to the UFC office?
Or? So, you know, a lot of people ask me that, and not that I've ever been told the rules, because I, like, the belts that I've had in boxing or whatever, I have them, right? But I think about it, it's like, Muhammad Ali sells his belt, he's not even fighting anymore, so, yeah. That's the rule.
Yeah.
You win and you get a new one, you know? It's not like they're going to take it away from you.
Last but not least, you know, I'm sure it's something that's come up, but were a rematch to happen, and obviously there's an appetite to see it happen, do you feel very comfortable, confident in that scenario?
I would go into that as if it was just a whole new fight.
Yeah.
The victory is great.
Yeah.
And I love that it was in devastating fashion and in dominating fashion. I love that. But that fight's over.
Yeah.
You know, there's new things to come. Big things to come, and I can't stop now. I don't feel like I'm even at my full potential. I think if I felt like I was at my full potential, I should retire.
You know, these articles, Sports Illustrated, Ronda was on the cover of Sports Illustrated as the most dominant athlete on the planet. Now, you successfully, easily dominated the most dominant athlete on the planet. Does that make you the most dominant athlete on the planet? Just, you know, it seems logically to make sense.
I think for me, I can't think of myself that way. I will always think of myself as someone striving to be the most dominant athlete.
Well, you are a humble champion.
And
congratulations on what was truly, Jim, one of the signature sports moments of the decade. Holly Holm knocks out Ronda Rousey. You're listening to the Free For All. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for your time.
WSJ Podcasts. Listen ambitiously.